Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Jake, we're kind of in this weird place in WWE between WrestleMania and the draft where there's a bit of a lull in terms of anything advancing too aggressively, but we did in the main event tonight, one, have, I think, a good match between Solo and Riddle with no DQ stips that sort of tipped us off to, the likelihood of some interference. Solo ended up winning with a sudden Samoan spike, and then the Usos and Solo triple teamed Riddle, KO and Sammy nowhere in sight, but at least they didn't come out right afterwards smiling and rapping like the Acclaimed on Wednesday when they weren't there for poor Adam Cole and Britt Baker. It's just they're just adding some steam and some heat, promoting next week's SmackDown, which features a draft and the big tag team title match, and then also the six-man tag with Riddle, Sammy, and KO against the Usos and Solo. Did this kind of check the boxes that needed to be checked in that regard, or do you think they're losing some momentum or other heading into the draft next week?
I mean, yeah, it kind of feels like everything's on a bit of a treadmill at the moment. Like, this was a very wrestling-heavy show for a WWE show. You know, there were five matches, I think. Was there just one promo with the Usos in the ring cutting a promo? Felt like a show that went from match to match to match to match, and they had some video packages and other things that interspersed between things. It didn't feel like quite as full as some episodes of Dynamite or Rampage feel at times, where you're just very quickly cutting from one thing to the next. But there wasn't a whole lot in the way of story development here, and there was also some like Omos and Seth Rollins was announced for the pay-per-view. I don't even think they've interacted since WrestleMania. Like, there's just a lot of things that feel like they're just kind of thrown in to kind of bide their time between now and the draft.
I was thinking when they were hyping the lineup to Backlash, it's like, well, you know, I mean, it's good they're doing that, but the hype would be a lot different, and it was a lot different back in the days when they were hyping, trying to get people to subscribe to WWE Network or trying to get people to pay, you know, once $30 and then $50+ for WWE pay-per-views. It's just a different zone, right? They're in a different place right now. I don't know how Peacock feels about the fact that WWE is soft selling instead of hard selling like they were masters at in the past. They must be, happy enough. WWE must be happy enough with the numbers that they're seeing. But, yeah, it doesn't feel like they're pushing super hard. There's sort of a confident stride to what they do, and they'll do what they're going to do. They feel like they're kind of polished at what they do, and they're not going to act desperate for you to watch. They just think they tell a good story, and you will. That is always up for being tested. I mean, the Bad Bunny situation, I mean, yes, they did video recaps of it, but it didn't come across. And I know they're going to heat things up on Raw on Monday, and that's fine. I mean, you don't want things to peak too early either. It feels like a pay-per-view they're doing because there's a pay-per-view scheduled, not that there's these feuds that absolutely are demanding that there be some sort of big stage for things to be settled on. But they've got, a couple weeks to clean that up a bit, especially with Bad Bunny showing up at Raw on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, they're not out of time or anything. It really does just feel like they're in a bit of a limbo period where they're just kind of getting to the draft, and then they'll probably have a lot of shuffling and storylines changing rapidly post-draft to kind of reorient to those new rosters and that new environment. And so there is going to be a bit of awkwardness because they're not going to announce matches ahead of time, for Backlash that kind of tip off where they're going with the draft. Although maybe, I guess you could argue that, that putting Zelina Vega in a women's title match and then throwing together a U.S. title match really quickly are kind of tipping off that we might be seeing some of those people moving across brands. But yeah, it's definitely a period of kind of slow development and awkwardness on WWE TV right now.
What do you think of the performance of Riddle, who's been out for months, and Solo Sikoa, who is being protected and featured as in the way the announcers talk about him and the way that he wins clean over Riddle and just the way that he wrestles and, of course, the group and the people he associates with, they want him to be a top main event draw, top tier. Maybe not a top guy, but I don't think they're ruling that out either. You know, there's only, you know, 2, 3, 4 of those at a time, but they certainly want him in the top tier mix. How do you think they're doing and to tonight make you any more or less confident in his ability to have main event level singles matches? Because Riddle certainly is somebody that you should be able to have that against.
I think he's a solid wrestler. You know, it remains to be seen if his personality will stand out, you know, or even if it needs to. They may be, you know, considering putting him with a manager if, you know, the bloodline eventually does dissolve and he's out on his own. You know, he might be the inheritor of Paul Heyman, for all we know. You know, he reminds me, in terms of his in-ring style, a lot of Eddie Fatu or Umaga. You know, there's a lot of similarities there. He's chosen a lot of moves that coincide with Umaga, and they're not running away from that comparison at all, obviously using the Samoan spike and everything else. So I think they probably do have big plans for him. And whether or not he can reach that very tip-top level, it remains to be seen. But I think he's hanging in there with top-tier wrestlers and not looking out of place. And I think that's a positive sign for somebody who's really only been in the company for a couple of years.
I agree. I mean, I'm not like ultra confident that he can be, everything that they want him to be. I'll just put it that way, because I think that really helps. But I have nothing to rule out that he can be either. I just, you know, the evidence just isn't there, including promos. You know, that is not nothing, being able to, without being, he doesn't have to stand on his own right now. So when the time comes that he's going to have to stand more on his own, that's when he'll be tested more. You can't necessarily. I mean, if Paul Heyman is his manager for the next 6 years and Roman Reigns moves on to other things in a year and a half or something like that, and Solo is there and they protect him and keep him strong and Heyman talks for him, I mean, he can be a top guy. I don't know that he'll, and, you know, you can, hopefully they throw these words back at me. You know, someone can, but I don't know that he'll be at the level of, you know, Steve Austin, John Cena, Roman Reigns, but he might be just that next level down and certainly good enough. Again, there's no reason to doubt it. It just hasn't been proven yet, but he does have good to very good WWE TV style matches. And, you know, to me, the test of being able to be a top guy, the guy, and that means the person who can headline a pay-per-view month after month after month after month against different opponents, sometimes year after year. The test for that is, can you imagine him being in a headline match on a PLE with everybody else on the undercard? And it doesn't feel like a letdown when his match starts. And I don't think we're at a point where it's inevitable it would. That has affected some other wrestlers who have been given a chance to be at the top. Heck, it hurt. I use this example a lot lately because Sting's in the news after Dynamite last week. But Sting was a guy who, after he beat Ric Flair back in 90, it didn't work. You know, the pay-per-view main events are like, oh, God, Ric Flair used to do this, and now it's Sting. And these, you know, he's got a great entrance. He's young. He's got a good, you know, he's got good charisma and all that. But it's not a Ric Flair match. So that's what I'm looking for out of Solo, because I think he can be protected and elevated or fortified with Heyman promos or something along those lines. But can you imagine him personality-wise and match quality being the guy who ends pay-per-views, and it seems like that's the right decision and a natural fit? And that just hasn't been proven yet. But so far, he's not ruling it out, I guess is what I'd say. And that's a lot of people by this point, I think we'd be disqualifying from that trajectory.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. There really isn't a mountain of evidence for you to decide one way or the other where he's going to land. I think most of what he has accomplished thus far falls into the like positives category. Maybe there's a few things that you could point out where it's like, okay, you know, he had a bad instinct here, or he was clumsy here or there, but really, for the most part, I have nothing but positive things to say about his accomplishments though so far. And it certainly doesn't hurt that he's a part of, you know, the most successful faction in the company's recent history. You know, being involved in that and having close relationships with those people and having them want you to succeed and putting you in a position to succeed is certainly an advantage that Solo has that other people do not. And whether he can find the confidence and the swagger that somebody like Roman Reigns has, where he feels like he's you know, he's destined to, you know, be a guy that closes pay-per-views for years and years into the future. I mean, that's, it'd be hard to label anybody with that in WWE right now outside of Reigns himself. And so I wouldn't put that as necessarily something he needs to attain in the short term. It's, you know, that could be years away. But I do like what he's doing right now. I think he feels like he's fitting into that role of the enforcer in the Bloodline. Clearly his brothers are very invested in making sure that he's a success, and they, you know, they can certainly do some of the talking for him too if they need to.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. Well, we got more to talk about on the show. And so at this point we'll pause. We'll formally introduce ourselves, give out the phone numbers and email so that you can participate if you'd like, and then we'll get on with the conversation. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, April 21st, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And we invite you to become a VIP member and get a bunch of perks, including 30-plus years of archived newsletters, retro radio shows and podcasts, hundreds of retro radio shows, thousands of podcasts dating back 20 years, and over 30 years of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter back issues on demand in our library. Plus ad-free access to our website, ad-free versions of our free podcasts, which is a cool bonus, and then a bunch of VIP-exclusive podcasts in our lineup, which are compatible with a native podcast app on Apple, the Apple Podcast app. No password to enter, no advanced settings to fumble with. It's a single click when you sign up, so it's very streamlined. Check out details on going VIP at pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear on the show is Jake Barnett here. He is from ProWrestling.net, and he joins me periodically covering as co-host as we cover Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown with our live stream post shows throughout the week, every week. Jake, welcome back to the co-host chair. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Wade. Always a pleasure to be here.
So tell people a little bit more about how they can read more from you and hear more from you between your appearances here on the post shows.
Yeah, so I guess you can find me on Twitter if you want to, at Barnett Jake with two T's. You can also see my live reviews of Dynamite and occasionally SmackDown over at ProWrestling.net on Wednesdays and Fridays. I also join Jason Powell for the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which is a members exclusive audio that we record each and every week, and then also pay-per-view reviews for AEW and WWE shows. And you can read more about membership and signing up and getting hooked up with podcasts over at pwmembership.net.
All right. So if you want to join tonight's conversation, the number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard, and then we'll know that you want to be on the show. The other way to participate is by email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We do have our on-site correspondent, Josh, calling from having just attended SmackDown. So we're going to to him now and find out what it's like in the building. Josh, welcome to the show. It's great to hear from you, and thanks for being our on-site correspondent tonight.
Yes, thank you, Wade. I'm glad I was able to get out there in time and get my boys to my grandma or the grandma so I can call in.
That's great.
I took my two nephews and my three sons tonight all by myself. They're all under 10, so it was a good family experience. My nephews have never been to a WWE show. This is my boy's third show, so everybody had a good time. That last match got them all crazy. I don't know how my mom's going to get them to sleep now.
Wow. So that's actually just such a great focus group for the experience tonight. So I want to know what you think, because you've been a long-time reader and listener of The Torch, and so we know you have a lot to say. But I also want to get some thoughts on how the first-timers and the kids who had been to shows before reacted in particular, too, and if some of that surprised you and maybe goes against the grain of how some adult fans and even adult podcast hosts react to the show sometimes. So I guess my first question for you is, did anything surprise you about what your sons and nephews reacted to or didn't react to, what they liked or didn't like?
The one thing I would say was my nephews don't really see the product too much. but they would ask my sons, what do you think, who's this guy, who's that guy? And my son Legion, he's the one that watches it with me every week, every SmackDown all the time. My other two sons, they play the WWE game and watch here and there. So it's more of what's going on here and there. But they were all able to pick up on, I would say, who WWE wants you to cheer for. So I'd say, you know, that's a good sign for WWE for that thing. I would say they thought Solo was pretty awesome, just able to take those hits and then smacking and Riddle. I mean, it just they were upset that Riddle lost, but they thought it was just going through the table was just everything to them. They just couldn't believe it, you know. Just, I mean, so. But yeah, my son Legion. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, how did that reaction to Solo compare to the reaction to Gunther? Because I would think Gunther would get kind of a similar ooh ah reaction from kids.
I think that the thing with Solo, I think he just looks different, you know, and the kids just go Gunther. It was booze all around because my boys like New Day, so I mean, to them it's just with the trumpet and everything and all that, but they just. The one thing I would say is they didn't understand the chokeout. That was a little hard for them to understand compared to the rest of the, you know, the rest of the pinfalls or someone tapping out, I would say. But I think they were just excited, you know. We had my, like I said, my mom came and picked us up so we didn't have to park and everything. And they're just screaming at her saying, you wouldn't even believe what just happened. And I would just say that, you know, for them, it was a pretty awesome show all around, Wade. I think, you know, I was telling Travis and Rich and them in the group chat that the crowd tonight, the last two shows we went to SmackDown last summer, and they only had the lower bowl, but it was sold out. It had about 7,500 people there. And then we went to the day after Christmas show in Columbus, and that was in the Blue Jackets Arena. We have two arenas in Columbus, and they're about the same size. And they typically don't try to run shows in the Blue Jacket Arena around playoff time in case the Blue Jackets make it. They don't want to deal with it, even though they're really not that good. I would say that this time it was the same as the house show for after Christmas was just the lower bowl. Tonight, when I got there, I was surprised they had the upper bowl open, and I would say that 95% of the tickets were sold tonight, Wade. I mean, I was amazed. That was the biggest crowd. That was probably the biggest crowd in Columbus I went to in a long time. And it was amazing to see, you know, in Ohio, it's hit or miss. I've been to Cleveland, Toledo, different shows, and I went to see The Rock and John Cena and Gund Arena when they had 20,000. And I've been to Toledo when there was 1,500 people for a SmackDown taping. So this was one of the, I would say, more exciting crowds that I have in person, especially for a TV show, non-pay-per-view, I would say. It was just a lot of families there, a lot of people dancing, having a good time. It was great to see it, you know.
What else stood out in terms of crowd reactions for the night, not just you and the kids, but just overall for the crowd? Was there any reaction that was larger or less than you would have expected or predicted going in?
We didn't stay for both dark matches, but we stayed for the first dark match, at least for part of it. It was L.A. Knight versus Shinsuke, and L.A. Knight, just the crowd just went just almost as nuts as they did for Shinsuke. I mean, L.A. Knight, wow. I don't know what he's going to have to do or whatever, but you're hearing everybody just yell, yeah, yeah. And, you know, they didn't let him get on the mic, which was a little disappointing. But, you know, that was a pretty good pop. I would say Rey Mysterio, when the LWO came out, was a pretty great pop, too. I mean, Rey... Everybody, all the kids love him. You know, my kids each have a Rey action figure and stuff. So just to see him and him able to still move and go at it was good. The crowd was pretty good for Ricochet and Strowman. I think that for the most part, I think the biggest pop, I think, was when they thought Riddle could have won at the end. The crowd thought for a second that he was going to win, and that was pretty loud. I mean, I was a little surprised about that because I just didn't seem to pick Riddle as someone in at least Columbus area that they would get behind that much. But it just shows you, I think, how much the people with the bloodline. You still have that was another one that when the Usos came out, they got a pretty big pop too when they did their little promo in the ring. I would say that was probably one of the bigger ones with Ray, outside of people who have the matches tonight.
How long did the Shinsuke LA Knight match last? I assume Shinsuke won if you stayed for the end. And then what was scheduled after that when you left?
The match was Imperium versus the Brawling Brutes, minus Gunther and Sheamus. So originally we weren't going to stay for any of them because my nephew has a soccer game at like 9 a.m. So my sister-in-law was like, please don't keep them out too late. And I was like, okay. Because the advertised main event was supposed to be Finn Balor versus Chad Gable, which kind of just threw me off a little bit because Gable's never on SmackDown. But they switched it up and they announced it was going to be LA Knight and Shinsuke, so we decided to stay for that. So I thought LA Knight, they were going to let him be on the mic. So, but I'd imagine that the Brawling Brutes probably won that match. It's probably ending up right now.
I forget. Let me throw to Jake Barnett, my co-host, and see if he's got questions for you, Josh, about tonight's show.
Okay.
I think you covered most of what I was going to ask, Wade, but I was curious about the reaction for Braun Strowman and Ricochet. They seem like they're perhaps getting set up for a tag title push, and it seemed like through the television that they got a pretty strong reaction, but it wasn't anything close to like what the Usos or Mysterio got. So are they improving in terms of how they're connecting with crowds?
I would say that when they came out, I think Ricochet got a little bit more of a pop, but I would say that their finisher they do, they got a big pop. When he's walking on his shoulders, I think, you know, especially like I said, for my nephews who never really watched it before, they couldn't believe he was carrying a guy on his shoulders and then he did the flip, and the crowd went pretty good for it. I would tend to agree that I could see them getting some kind of tag team push soon for sure.
For the women's match, did the crowd seem into it the way that WWE would want them to be? You know, cheering for both of the baby faces and into the action, and how did it compare to the men's matches?
I was disappointed in the women's. Chelsea Green, I would say, her taking the way she takes her falls, I was very impressed with her. But outside of that, it didn't seem like too much heat. And I don't know if it's Liv or who's you imagine will want them to carry it, but, you know, Sonya and them were just not really – the crowd really wasn't into it. They had Natty and B-Fab was the opening dark match. And that kind of surprised me because when I heard Hit Row's music play at the beginning, I just assumed it was going to be a tag. And when they let B-Fab, I think they're trying to get her to work. They played on the trope of Michigan, you know, is better than Ohio State kind of thing. Hit Row was wearing Michigan hats to get at the crowd for cheap heat. But Natty, it was just a typical Natty match, and she got a roll up and won, so... But I would say I was very disappointed in the women's matches compared to last time SmackDown was here. They had the six-way match to see who would fight Ronda. And to my surprise, like I told Rich this last year, when Ronda came out just to do commentary, that was probably one of the loudest pops I heard that night. And I was very surprised because I was just accustomed to hearing her get booed or people just talk crap about her online. But to hear the crowd, at least in Columbus, cheer and go nuts for Ronda, it kind of put her in a different view for me as a fan. Like, man, maybe I'm just not seeing as a more of a hardcore fan that these casual fans just know who Ronda Rousey is and think it's just awesome that she's there. And maybe to WWE, that's what they bank on a lot in certain cities,
yeah.
Especially like a city, I would say, like Columbus.
I think my last question for you, but no promises there, is was there a point where it felt like you're at a TV show and you were a prop in the crowd, which was a problem with WWE, our on-site correspondents often cited, pre-pandemic? Or did they clean that up? Was this a really good live experience for you in person in terms of lulls or not having a lot of video packages? Just talk about the flow of the show, especially with a bunch of potentially restless kids if things slow down for too long.
Tonight, outside of that, like I said, the house show I went to in December, compared to last year's SmackDown, tonight the matches might not have been as good as a couple of the matches last year with the star power, I would say. But that first hour and 10 minutes was great because it was almost match, a little Adam Pearce promo they had, and then they went into another match. I mean, they hit the match as well, and to know that we were going to get at least five matches tonight was great. I would say about 9:15 to 9:30 when they were right before they went to that Uso promo kind of thing, they did the typical show your signs. They did 3 minutes of DX. That's always funny to me, playing DX and just seeing kids, you know, throwing up the X, which I was very happy to see a lot of kids just throwing up the X and not doing, like, suck it for, you know, I hear my sister-in-law the next day, my nephew's going around telling people to suck it. I would say the first hour was great, Wade. It was probably, I was pleasantly surprised that they were able to keep it moving and flowing. Like I said, the second hour, I don't know if they showed certain things on TV that they didn't show to the crowd, because there was a couple moments that I got a little restless, and we had to take a bathroom break for a couple of them right before the Usos came out. And my youngest son, he's hit or miss, but he likes the Usos because he likes to just tease his older brother with "We the Ones." And we're going to the bathroom, and he heard the Usos music play, and he ran in the bathroom, went to the bathroom, hurried to wash his hands, and started yelling, "We got to get back, we got to get back, we got to get back."
Sure.
So he's able to see at least most of that, which I was happy that he was able to get back, and it wasn't too bad of a time to get there. We were pretty good seats to get in and out of too, but I would say, you know, it was the first hour was, I would say, a 9 out of 10. The second hour maybe 7 out of 10, but it wasn't as bad as what I thought. Like hearing on other podcasts, people saying, you know, they stopped. I would say the only time that someone stayed in the ring for a long time that seemed out of place was the Ricochet and Braun Strowman. They had them come out, and they were doing their poses and everything. And I saw on the screen, it says, "Coming up next." And it seemed like a long commercial break. And then they came back into a promo. And then the Viking Raiders came out after whatever they played coming back from commercial. But I think that for the most part, compared to last summer when we went last year, it was an improvement, I would say.
All right, well, very good. Did you sense the crowd was disappointed? They didn't see Ronda Rousey. They didn't see Roman Reigns. They didn't see KO and Sammy. Was there any or did it just seem like, nah, there's enough big names here, we're happy?
I think, for the most part, there was a lot more kids that I noticed tonight than I've seen in the past. So to them, I don't think it was a problem. I think for my son Legion, he was a little disappointed, because he's never seen Roman Reigns there, even though he doesn't like him. And he always tells me Roman Reigns is going to lose whatever next match it is. I think the most that he was disappointed in was that KO and Sammy weren't there, or Cody or Rhea. Just seeing the chance, he was excited that Xavier Woods got a chance at the title. But he told me, he said, "Daddy, I don't think the Woods can beat Gunther. I think Gunther's might chop him a little too hard tonight." You know, so. It was a good experience, Wade, and I would say, you know, they're definitely hitting their stride. You know, I couldn't tell, like you're reporting when you're talking about Vince being back and stuff. It didn't seem like what I've seen in the past of going. It was pretty good flow. I enjoy SmackDown tapings because starts at 7:45. You can get out by 10 o'clock. If you don't want to stay for the Dark Show main event, get in, get out. I haven't took my kids to Raw taping. I can't see that with school being the next day, unless it's summer, and it just seems like a marathon to take, you know, younger kids there for that long.
Compared
to a SmackDown. But yeah, I think for overall tonight, Wade, for two first timers and a couple people that. Three boys that have been there for the third time and second taping, they just enjoy it. I think it's so much, if you have kids, so much better to take them there and them just experience compared to seeing it on TV. Nothing wrong with just watching on TV, but to see their faces and everything and how excited they got and standing on their seats, and it was, you know, I'm sure they're going to remember this for a long time, and I'm appreciate WWE for that. So
I went to my first live show a couple months before I turned 10, and I'll never forget it. I mean, it's just the excitement of being in the arena instead of watching it on TV, and yeah, I mean, it's just that those are great memories if you're giving those kids.
You know, it's funny because I know I'm gonna let you go after this. The first show I ever went to, I was 12, and it was a WCW show. And the main event was Ric Flair and Macho Man for the WCW title. And I remember being there, and they did the spot where Macho Man pulled down Ric Flair's trunks. And I just thought it was so funny. And my stepdad took me, who could care less about wrestling, but he knew he had to take me to the event. Someone had to take me. And we went there. But I always remember this, but the two things with it is when he saw the Giant, Big Show, from that he was his rookie year, and he's like, man, that guy is a big guy. And my stepdad always remembers that. But my stepdad ended up going to the house show the day after Christmas, and the one person that he said that he enjoyed the most of the whole show was Omos, because he was 7'4", he was so big. And my stepdad doesn't know anything about wrestling, but whenever he sees a TikTok or some of Omos, he sent me the TikTok of Omos throwing out Brock Lesnar in the ring. He said, "There's my boy Omos." And for people like him, that's great. But I told him, I hate to break it to him. I said, he's got a lot of work going. He's like, "Is Omos going to be there tonight?" I said, "No, he's on Raw, sir." But I appreciate you letting me call in, Wade, and I'll let other people call and stuff. But like I said, if you have a chance to take your kids out, you know, and tickets were very favorable for taking five kids and myself tonight. So I think if you have a chance to take your kids, it's something that it's definitely family friendly, and it's good, and they'll enjoy it. I can't see how they wouldn't, especially with, even if you don't have the biggest names there, to them it's, they're all larger than life.
Well, Josh, thank you so much. It was it's fun hearing, through the lens of the kids, you know, and what they saw, and even the biggest Omos fan out there too.
Yes.
So thank you. from New Day to Omos in terms of who liked him. So I appreciate it, Josh. I appreciate your loyalty over these years, and let me know next time you go to a show, and call in anytime.
Well, for sure. Thank you, guys. See you, Jake. Nice talking to you.
Jake appreciates it, even if he doesn't say so.
Oh, Sorry, yeah, caught myself on mute. Take care, man.
Yep. That's what I figured.
See you, Wade. Right. Thank you.
You bet. Take care, Josh. All right. So if you want to give us a call, we actually don't have anybody on hold right now. A couple people dropped off, but I wanted to get to Josh anyway. So call us back or call in for the first time. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. I also saw another 614 error code call up. So if you attended the show, don't be shy about also calling in and letting us know what you thought of the show compared to Josh. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Jake, let's jump to an email from Chris from Oklahoma. He wasn't able to call in tonight, but he did send in an email. He said, I can call in, but I have been considering the one issue I'm curious to see is how WWE addresses the Usos and Solo Sikoa, with the Bloodline being a huge part of WWE SmackDown and the Usos being non-champions. Do you see them coming up with a reason for them to be on both shows? Second question, do you think the way they have booked Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn cooled Sami off more than kept him hot? So first things first, the draft next week, WWE didn't give us a ton to talk about on this week's SmackDown, which we kind of acknowledged at the top of the show, although there's certainly things we haven't talked about yet, we will. But the draft looms. We saw the graphic with all the wrestlers shoved onto the graphic, and Cole said everybody's eligible. Chris brings up a good point. You know, Reigns can float between brands because he's champion. KO and Sami can too, but you are assigned to a brand, so when you lose the titles, you have to, you know, presumably revert back to that brand and not float, even if you're part of the Bloodline. Now, WWE has not been following that closely, which I think takes some of the edge away from the draft, some of the intrigue, because it's like, well, we're just watching everybody now, so all you're telling us is starting next week we'll see fewer wrestlers on each show. And if you really – and that's only assuming you even follow what you decide in terms of who gets to be on which show. The brand split feels so soft right now. I think that takes away some of it because you can't even imagine what the new dream matches are going to be because it's hard to even recall which wrestler actually belongs on which show when they're appearing on both. So with that out of the way, his specific question is, will the Bloodline be broken up? And I would have thought if the Usos were still champs, they could play that up. Like, well, if the Usos lose, then they're going to have to go to Raw. Because they got drafted to Raw, whereas Roman is still on SmackDown. But as long as they're champs, they get to be on SmackDown. And they could have played that up, but they don't even have that to work with since Reigns is champ, but the Usos aren't. So your thoughts on that aspect of the draft, Jake?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of different ways that they could play it. Splitting them up would, potentially force some character development for certain people that that would be interesting. I don't think they'll split up the Usos, but maybe you might end up with Solo being on an opposite brand from the Bloodline, or they may just say that, Paul Heyman has so much influence over Adam Pearce seemingly because of Roman's, title reign that he made sure that kind of thing didn't happen. It's just one of those privileges of being in the Bloodline. I guess personally, I think it would be fun to see them, them kind of put Solo out on his own where he's not, getting bailed out on every occasion by his brothers and force him to sort of develop in that way. But I mean, if I was going to put money on a guess, it would be that they'll keep them together at least until Roman is no longer, the Universal Champion.
Is there anything they could be doing right now to get people more geared up for the draft, especially with the handicap of having such a soft brand split at this point? It's hard to be too specific about what new dream matches might result in. Of course, they don't also want to get people excited for things that aren't going to happen, but they don't want to tip their hand on what is going to happen. So all kinds of kind of things that make the draft more difficult to hype.
Yeah, I guess, in years past, they've had dueling general managers and they would tease harder brand splits where people were genuinely not going to be moving between shows, but because they've sort of lowered the barriers on so many of those things, I think a lot of those old levers just aren't there anymore to pull. And having Adam Pearce be managing both shows, they don't even have a Sonya Deville to pull the trigger for one brand versus the other like they did even the last time. And so it's going to – it'll be awkward to see how that is, you know, presented. Are we going to have, you know, an alternate person? You know, are they going to say it's the TV executives in the boardrooms making these calls and that kind of thing again, where it just kind of feels pretty weak and contrived? Or are they going to try to do something a bit more interesting? I'm not quite sure, but I hope they tease the idea of firming up that brand split. We don't need, you know, all of Vince McMahon's various, cross brand invitational and a bunch of other yeah. things that popped up over the years that was essentially a bag of tricks. We ran out of ideas for this person, and so we're doing something unique with them kind of situation. So I think that's where you can actually start the process of building up dream matches. But they have a lot of championships right now that, you know, the women's tag team titles have kind of suffered and languished for a while. I think the U.S. title under Theory is in a bit of a weak position at the moment. And so, you know, maybe the brand split might benefit them by offering up some fresh matchups.
Yeah, do you think there's a surprise in store for us with the draft? Or has anything come to mind that you think would be a fascinating twist that maybe people don't see coming, that is a card they could play?
Yeah, I mean, other than you know, splitting up factions, like, you know, potentially Rhea Ripley being pulled from Judgment Day, or...
Yeah.
There's the Bloodline. You could see, you know, Solo on an opposite brand or whatever the case may be, or the Usos on an opposite brand from Roman and Solo. And so I guess there's, you know, splitting up Sammy and Kevin, for instance, so that if they ever lost the titles, they'd be, you know, they'd be on islands alone at that point. Now, there's some things that they can do. People have brought up, you know, splitting up the Street Profits, if that's an option. You know, if they want to have Montez Ford embark on a singles career, that would be a way that they could do that. In fact, they did sort of tease that on Monday's Raw in their own way, where both of them seemed kind of surprised by the idea that they could end up on opposite brands. And so there's those old kind of tropes. But it's tough. I think the biggest surprises will probably come from new blood coming up from NXT or people who have been out on injury returning. That would be my guess.
Yeah. To me, this is a draft where it's the most difficult to come up with obvious moves. We'll delve more into it next week on the flagship as we get, you know, real warmed up to it and it's more imminent. But it's tough because, I mean, I don't expect them to move Roman to Raw. And if he doesn't move to Raw, then what else even matters? I mean, it matters all that much, especially with how many people have been on both shows. So I'm curious what that would be. I also wish we got some semblance of how it's going to be structured. I wish I was confident they had put thought into it and they were going to present it in a way that made the most logical sense compared to past years. And I think that would get people more excited. But yeah, I mean, the idea that, oh, Adam Pearce is the middle manager in charge of both shows, present at both shows, they're not even explaining, like, who's advocating for which brand? Who's going to decide this? And I was hoping under Paul Levesque we'd get a recognition that it was poorly done, haphazardly done, scattershot. It just wasn't – there weren't, you know, proper rule setup that I think fans crave. Like, what's the process? So maybe they'll surprise us, but certainly I haven't heard any hints yet that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I haven't heard any big items. I think there's certainly some room for them to, you know, to move up people from NXT. I think moving Gunther over to Raw would be a solid move because that show definitely needs a champion for people to be aiming for on a regular basis. And he's the next best thing to Roman at this point in the company. He's got a strong title reign, and he's a fantastic wrestler that can work with anybody. And he has Imperium around him that can act as sort of gatekeepers in a way. And so I think there's some potential there. But there's really nothing huge other than I think AJ Styles might be getting ready to come back pretty soon. Yeah. You know, there's been rumors about Randy Orton. You know, there's people that could benefit from a move, like LA Knight, who could, you know, get a fresh start over on Raw and maybe not be losing quite as often as he has.
Right.
So there's plenty of, you know, acts that are over, that could be poised to make returns or benefit from moves. It's just what direction they're going is anybody's guess at this point.
I want to get back to part two of Chris's question in a second, but I'll forget if I don't bring it up now. What do you think of how they're using LA Knight, especially in light of Josh, our on-site correspondent, noting what a big crowd reaction it got and that the fans like his catchphrase and that kind of thing? What would you be doing different with him? And this is assuming there isn't some reason we're not aware of that they are hesitant to get behind him more than they are. And I don't even know what that is, and I haven't heard anything. But, sometimes when someone's jobbing when they're getting big crowd reactions, it's because management's like, we can't rely on this guy. We don't like this guy. We don't trust him. He's hurting people in the ring. He's got a bad attitude. I haven't heard any of that about LA Knight. So I'm curious what his trajectory, like where he ends up, whether he gets drafted to a different show or not. What do you think of what they're doing with him, and what is his upside?
Well, I think his upside is just his charisma and his ability to talk. I don't think he's a particularly like standout wrestler. He's not somebody who's going to go out there and give you the proverbial five-star match every week. He's not a Gunther or somebody in that class where you almost kind of expect the matches to be at another level. I don't feel that way about LA Knight, but I do feel he's a good enough storyteller in the ring that he can be a competent wrestler, inside of that WWE style that they promote. And he's a fantastic talker, and he has a connection with people. And I don't think you can ignore those things, for the value that they bring to the table. I mean, it's not a mystery at this point that crowds are really behind the guy, even though he's really supposed to be a heel. And so I think he's almost like the anti-Austin Theory in a way, where Theory is this guy who's just incredible in the ring. He's got all the tools. He's young, but he's just, he's got the personality of a piece of yard equipment. There's just nothing there. And I think if you're going to do something with Knight after the draft, if you're moving that title off of Theory anytime soon, I think Knight would be a guy who would fit right into that role. He's just a great heel champion.
Yeah. Yep. So back to Owens and Sammy, and has Sammy cooled off more than would have been inevitable following, a peak moment for him in Montreal? I don't want to read too much into what's going on pre-draft and in between WrestleMania and Backlash, but has there been more of a lost momentum than was necessary? And is there a particular cause, or do you not buy into that and think, no, things are going just fine, he's just in a different spot?
I think there was going to be a cool down regardless. They had a fantastic main event at WrestleMania, 39 night one. It could really not have gone any better in terms of the crowd reaction and how that came across. It was a big crowning achievement after what had been a fantastic 6 to 9 months of Sammy's career. He kind of reinvented himself and revitalized his character, turned the corner on a babyface run. And I think there was always this sort of shadow hanging over Sammy in a way, because they go to Saudi Arabia like 2 months after WrestleMania every year. And yeah, he's not going. There's just no way that he's going. It's been made very clear that he has no interest in going. Kevin Owens has had no interest in going because of that. And I think the Saudi regime has no interest in bringing him in. And so, they have a tag title match next week on SmackDown. Could they be moving those titles back? I think it's possible.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So elsewhere on the show, you mentioned Gunther being a strong champion. I thought Xavier put in a good, believable effort as a challenger. I just thought this could have gone multiple ways, and I wouldn't have been shocked if Gunther just beat him in a minute. Heck, Kofi lost to Lesnar that way. So why not Xavier to really help put over Gunther? What do you think of Xavier being that competitive? We're 2 days removed from Commander being competitive with Jay White when Jay White's, supposedly going to be this top guy, and one of the first impressions AEW fans have of him, the first in a full-fledged match, is going even Steven with a guy who's 0-2 for 10, 12 minutes. Is it a mistake to have Xavier as a tag team wrestler who has not exactly been protected looking that competitive, or you know, as our on-site correspondent said, there's a lot of kids who are big fans of his, and why not just get a good match out of him as long as Gunther wins in the end?
Yeah, I think it's two very different scenarios. You know, Jay White is brand new. You know, there's a portion of your TV audience that is unaware of him, or at least not as plugged into who he is and what he's been doing as the most hardcore of your audience. Gunther's been well established now, and he's had a number of successful title defenses, both on television and pay-per-view. People know what to expect from Gunther. And Woods, I mean, despite relatively limited singles action, has actually had singles success against fairly strong opponents. You know, he took Roman Reigns to his limit at one point on a TV match. And so I don't think it's out of place for him to have a competitive match with Gunther, although I don't know if there was any reason to believe that, you know, there would be an actual upset. But I like the fact that Woods, you know, at least appears competent in the ring when he's in there in singles competition.
So what's in store for Gunther for the next year? Like, how big can he be, and what are his big matches coming up? He's in that phase where they're talking about how long his reign is and how dominant he is. And Wade Barrett says his chops tonight remind me of why I'm not in the ring anymore. They're obviously building him up, one, to be effective right now in that role, but I think there's something more planned. What is that over the next year?
Well, I don't think it was an accident that he was, you know, second to the final wrestler in the Royal Rumble match. They're clearly setting him up to be a potential dominant heel champion at some point at the world title level. And it's a matter of, you know, continuing to get him wins. And I think, you know, like the two guys I mentioned before, like AJ Styles and Randy Orton, could be two potential challengers for Gunther down the road. You know, they could go back to Cody Rhodes if he's unsuccessful in eventually capturing that world championship. Brock Lesnar is a guy that I think a lot of people would like to see get in the ring with Gunther. But I expect him to be Intercontinental Champion right up until the point where they're ready to start moving him into that main event picture. And I don't know if that's going to be SummerSlam or Survivor Series or even the Royal Rumble next year. But I think he's going to be a major player in this company come WrestleMania 40.
Yeah, I'm real intrigued by Gunther and his potential. I think he really stands out as different. It was interesting when Josh said, you know, the kids reacted more to Solo than they did to Gunther. Because to me, Solo is like more of a typical wrestler in certain ways that we've seen. And Gunther is the one who really stands out. Now, granted, he stands out differently than before. He lost a lot of weight and slimmed up. But I still think he has like this demeanor to him that's such a throwback and it's timeless. Backwards and forwards in terms of being a badass. And I thought, again, going back to Xavier, I give him credit. He was competitive and got in a lot of spots against Gunther, and you can argue whether he should be. The way he bumped for him and sold for him ultimately was part of the successful process, I think, of building Gunther up as something special, where when they decide to move him against top people, there's going to be a lot of intrigue. And I hope those top people are around and are in a position to sell for him and help elevate him even more.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the sky's the limit with Gunther in terms of, you know, if they're willing to put in the work to really continue to develop that character and to give him some layers. You know, he's sort of one-dimensional, and as you mentioned, it's sort of a timeless type of act, but it's not as dynamic as what we typically see in WWE's main event picture over the long haul. And so I am curious if he can get over that hump from being sort of this one-dimensional, you know, evil heel and transition into being, you know, like a Roman Reigns, or how I think they've developed Cody Rhodes over the last year. Can they make him into a three-dimensional character? And I think that's going to be his last major hurdle.
Yeah, part of the challenge, not doesn't have to be the Gunther show, but part of the challenge for Gunther is, can he expand his promos, or does he need to expand his promos to fill more TV time? Because that is part of that's part of the process of becoming a top guy, is being able to fill TV time. I mean, it sounds sort of crass and unfair that if you're over and you're good in the ring, but you can't fill TV time effectively, well, that becomes a problem. Once you're a draw, They want you on TV for an extended period of time in some form or fashion, weave throughout the show or long segments. So that, you know, but right now, I mean, I like his character, and I think it's in a really good position to succeed, but I'm curious if it grows.
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's the way everybody who has transitioned from being, you know, somebody who's over in the mid card to, you know, being a major cornerstone WWE star, it's all really hinged on whether or not they can make that transition into being a more dynamic character. You know, Edge, Kurt Angle, Rey Mysterio, you know, John Cena, Batista, you know, name your top stars over the last 20 or so odd years. They're all people who have, and Roman Reigns might even be the best example of a guy who just didn't seem like he got it, and then all of a sudden he's giving you master classes in subtlety and face acting and all those things that we look at and say, oh yes, obviously this guy's the top guy. And so can Gunther get to that point? I have no idea. You know, I don't know what his range is. I don't know if he's taking acting classes. I don't know what he's doing outside the ring to sort of prepare himself for that next level. But I hope he's getting the right advice and doing some of those things.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we got our 614 caller back. Another one. 614, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from, and if you attended the show tonight.
Hey, Wade. My name is Wesley, and I am in Columbus. I did attend the show.
I didn't catch your first name. What was it again?
Wesley.
Oh, Wesley. Great. Well, cool. Thanks for calling. I think you called earlier and then dropped off, but I'm glad you called back, or maybe there was somebody else who attended. So, I don't know if you heard, we talked to an outside correspondent, Josh, who called earlier, but would love to get your take on the show. And first, I guess I'll throw it to you and ask, is there anything in particular that stood out that you wanted to bring up from the experience in the building tonight?
Yeah, I only got some of what he had to share, but for me, you know, it was just a fun show. I enjoyed going to these shows. I went to Extreme Rules about a year and a half ago. I did not go to the house show in December, but I wanted to go to this one. I was unsure of how the show would be with the draft next week. I don't know if it's going to be a good show or not, but I think with them announcing, you know, Gunther versus Woods and some of the other matches, I bought my ticket this week, actually, so I didn't want to miss it. But it was fun. I really enjoyed it. I had some questions for you guys.
Oh, yeah, please do,
yeah. Yeah, just to kind of get your take from the TV side, was there any story reason to why Rhea and Dominic were not there?
Not that I know of. In fact, it was another thing I was going to bring up with Jake here in our conversation, is if they got away with having so many people not on SmackDown. I know you got to see a few people if you stayed for the dark matches. They had, you know, obviously talent who were not on the TV show in the dark matches before and after, but to not have Dominic, who, you know, I think people are buying tickets right now to boo Dominic. Like, I think that's part of the experience people want to buy right now. I think people know Roman isn't an every week guy, but also know Paul Heyman and know Rhea Ripley. So I don't know if there's a reason behind that. And in fact, I've got a note to check on that to see if something is up, but I just think they just know they're up against NBA and NHL playoff games, and it's not quite the draft and backlash time yet. So they're just kind of given some people, it's an opportunity to give some people some time off and take advantage of having, you know, enough talent depth that they can get away with putting on just a good wrestling-based show like tonight. Let me throw it to Jake and just ask how you think they came across here in terms of star power on the show.
It felt a little light. You know, we didn't have Roman. You don't have Paul Heyman. You know, you didn't have Rhea. You know, no Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens. You know, there were quite a few people who just weren't at this show. But I think, you know, and maybe, you know, Wesley can tell us. But I think the way that the show was paced and the fact that it was a lot of matches and not a lot of promos might have worked out better from a live experience standpoint. You know, I think one of the major complaints that, you know, I've heard from live correspondents over the years, is particularly in reference to WWE shows, is that there's just a lot of waiting around, and perhaps the, you know, that was somehow somewhat avoided with the way that they had drawn up this episode of SmackDown, just going from one match to the next for the most part with a couple of video packages, but no real long set piece promos in between match segments and whatnot. But I think from a star power standpoint, it felt a little light, but I think the pace of the show might have helped make up for it just a little bit.
For follow up on that or anything else? Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did miss Dominic not being there, me being one of them. Like, I was ready to boo him out of the building. And then when he wasn't there, I think some people were let down that they were not able to boo him, as many of the crowds have been the past few weeks. And one of the other interesting thing was they showed, coming up next, Sammy and KO. It was like a little... That was going to come up next, and they weren't there either. So I think crowd was a little disappointed that both of them weren't there. But apparently, Sami Zayn was supposed to do a meet and greet at one of the Cricket Wirelesses here in town that I went to in there, and they said like he was the original person who was supposed to be there, and he wasn't. So I guess he wasn't in town at all. But they had LA Knight there in his place, and there were a couple of hundred people I think showed up to meet LA Knight.
LA Knight would be, if you were going to see Sammy, you got LA Knight. I mean, LA is the newer star and people are into him, but I mean, he's no Sami Zayn. So I can imagine some people being a little bummed out.
Yeah, it was still cool though. I think people really enjoyed it. One of the other questions I have for you guys, what'd you think of the Usos promo? I thought it was really good and intense. There were Chan in there, and I'm glad the Usos didn't allow that because I hate that chant, and they weren't able to. I think everybody was just, like, listening, and then, like, the intensity of their promo was just, like, really well done. What did you guys think of that one?
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. Jake, what do you think?
I thought the Usos promo was really strong. You know, they do – you know, it's kind of a similar vein to their older, like, lockdown promos that they did prior to the Bloodline, but they've just sort of modified that style, and I think they've got it pretty well mastered at this point. You know, they do the call and response bits really well. You know, they feed off of each other really well. They have a lot of intensity that they inject into everything. I really enjoy their promos, you know, typically, you know, especially when they have something to talk about. I think, you know, their promos had gotten a little long in the tooth because they had been champions for so long and they kind of started to run together. But now that they're challengers and they're hungry and, you know, they have something that they're fighting for, I think this was a pretty big improvement over just what we were seeing pre-WrestleMania.
I wasn't as crazy about the Usos interview. Jimmy doing the dude, what do you think of this? Like, I think it had a point and it sort of made it, but there's times where when the Usos, and I was trying to recall what the other time was in the last couple of months where they did a promo and it was sort of a little more freelancing freestyle, a little bit out of the realm of what we normally see from them in the Bloodline. And it didn't really work for me either. So maybe it's just a personal taste thing, but I don't know. I mean, they were trying for something and it's a way to fill time and not just talk like normal. But when Jimmy's like playing the role of somebody else, I don't know. Some of the mystique for me disappears a little bit, but I think for what they were doing, it was well executed. I guess I'm just not crazy about it when they do kind of break from their normal parameters of their characters, because it just feels so different than what Solo and Reigns and Heyman do.
Yeah, maybe that was, you know, maybe that's what they're going for, you know, trying to have a little bit of a different flavor to, you know, the different aspects of the Bloodline. But I think you have
Steve Austin playing a banjo. I always do that example. Or, you know, like, you know, Ken, you know, like, if it breaks from my image of what they're like, that's not good. No, we've had this huge, huge sample size. Here's the thing. I think this is what it is. When it seems like Jimmy is trying to entertain us by being creative, I feel like that should be beneath him, that he should be above caring in that way. And it comes across like, let me find a creative way to make our point. And maybe it's unfair. And again, I don't feel like super strong about it, but I just didn't watch that going, oh, this is a good Uso promo, more of this. I like more of the subtlety and then more of the straightforward ass kicking and a little bit less of, I'm going to show my range of comedic, impersonation or, you know, improvisation, I guess.
But yeah, I mean, I had a little bit of a different read on what he was trying to do. I think he was, you know, because they had been asked numerous times in backstage interviews to give their sort of emotional response to losing the tag team titles. And I think he was just kind of doing that as a way to mock the people who continually ask them questions. Because, you know, Jay's essentially, you know, when he was calling all those, I guess, I don't know what you want to call it, but it came across like how comedians do like a nerdy white guy voice, essentially. And, you know, Jay's response was no comment. We're focused on what's next. We're not looking backwards. And so I think the intent of the promo wasn't for Jay or for Jimmy to be funny. It was more, you know, we're tired of these questions. We're focused on the tag team championships. We're still the same ass kickers we were before. And so I think it was just a different method of delivery there. And I understand, if, you know, it's all up to personal taste, but I thought it came across pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Wesley, back to you. Anything else you want to follow up on that with, or anything else from the show?
My last thing here is responding to one of your questions earlier, like the pace of the show. I'm not sure how it came across on TV, but there were three straight matches where the first wrestler or team came out and then it went to a commercial. And then they'd come back for the other team. So that's happened three straight times. I think that kind of, I'm not gonna say kill the crowd, but it was just like, oh, again, like we got one entrance and then, you know, 3-4 minutes of waiting and the wrestlers are just hanging out in the ring while they're doing commercials or, like the other correspondent said, like the DX thing, or they like show your sign. And then that happened, I think, the main event match, too. I think, if I remember correctly, was that they brought out Solo and then commercial again, or maybe somebody else. So I think there were four matches where that happened.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, now we're just like waiting around for these few minutes. But other than that, there was a lot of wrestling. I enjoyed the show. I thought it was really good again. I stayed for both of the dark matches afterwards. I think, like, probably
yeah,
like
talk about those, because we didn't hear too much from Josh about how those went, especially the second one he left beforehand.
Yeah, most of the people stayed for the first one, which was Shinsuke and LA Knight. And then the second one was the other two guys from the Imperium, Kaiser and Giovanni, against Sheamus and Butch. Sheamus and Butch won that one. I think more people left during that one. So probably about half the people stayed for that one. And I think that one went several minutes, and it was another good match. And they were having some fun in the match as well. Some little fun after the match too. So I think a good show overall from start to finish. I think the crowd enjoyed it. And yeah, I just really enjoyed the show tonight.
Yeah, yeah. So from a video package standpoint, we're talking about the flow of the show. There weren't a lot of video packages. Was there a reaction? I was going to ask Josh about this earlier, but I didn't, to the Karrion Kross interview. Because I think that was probably the longest one. There were recap packages. But in terms of original content, was the crowd glued to that? And did they have a reaction to Karrion Kross? Because, you know, talking about playing cards and, you know, I could imagine it either testing the patience of the crowd, or maybe they were really into the delivery and the scenery and the imagery.
I don't think that there was any reaction at all. I think we just watched it and then the next thing came up. And I didn't hear anybody around me really commenting on it. I think it was like just there.
Among the baby faces, who got the best reaction? You can include dark matches, but on the show itself, you had Strowman and Ricochet, you had Rey, you had Liv Morgan and Rodriguez, you had Xavier, you know, from New Day, which, you know, obviously a segment of the crowd's going to pop for that. And then I'm kind of curious where Matt Riddle fit in after all his time away. Was there an obvious hierarchy or top reactions compared to others?
Ray was the biggest pop of the night, I think.
After that, I think it would be Ricochet and Strowman during their match. They had a lot of pop for what they were doing. And then I probably would during his match. Although Gunther got quite a few cheers and claps during his match. I think people just really respect him as a wrestler.
Yeah, yep. Anything else from the show jump out that you'll – like, what do you remember most about the show tonight, you know, a few years from now, if you look back and recall going?
For me, I think this is a solid show. I think seeing Ray wrestle, I've watched him for a long time, so just being able to see him still wrestling is pretty cool. And the – oh, I should have mentioned table was really over tonight. I don't know if you could tell. People really wanted
yes.
table. Yeah, so that got a big pop. Riddle did not, because he came through the crowd. Like, we were all waiting for him for his entrance. But then he kind of came through the crowd, which took people off guard. So I don't think he would have got, he didn't get the pop that he would have if he came through the main set, I think. But I think it was, you know, there's nothing really, really great about the show, but I think it was just a solid show. I'm just glad I, you know, did buy a ticket this week and end up going. Just had fun with it.
Yeah, cool. Anything else you want to bring up, Wesley?
No, that's it. This is
cool.
First time calling in. Been listening to you for a few years now. I just wanted to share my experience, and I just really appreciate everything that you do.
How'd you first discover the show?
I'm one of those lapsed wrestling fans. I grew up watching it in the 90s, and then about 2005, 2006, I stopped watching, and then, like, 2019, I started watching, like, NXT, getting back into it, and so I was just, like, there were some websites that I had followed way back then, and I was just looking for analysis and commentary, and I forget how I found you exactly, but,
yeah.
I listen to every week, listen to the post shows and your flagship show. Not VIP, but I do recommend those who can go VIP because I know there's a lot more content out there. It's really great. I just really appreciate the analysis that you offer.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad you found us. Call again.
Cool. Have a great night, guys.
Yep, you bet. Yep, you too. Enjoy your weekend. All right, time for a jingle.
Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Talking to Sean. Talking to Sean in Tennessee.
Ah, Sean, always cleansing to hear your jingle. Welcome, Sean, to the show. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Oh, man. Well, first, wait, I think I told you the last time you actually had put my jingle out there. Because I just, you know, I don't expect it because I don't, you know, and every time I do, I just start laughing. I just start busting out laughing. I never know how to react anymore. Wade, it's been too long. It's been way too long. It's funny because I actually emailed because I'm actually watching SmackDown right now because I'd gotten home a lot later than I had planned on. I was planning on watching it live. And so I was like, let me email. And then the email wouldn't go through. I don't know why. I was like, okay, why is my email not going through? I put all this effort and all this time and all this passion into this email, and it's just gone for some reason. So I was like, well, let me just call in and ask the question I was going to ask because I don't know if you guys even talked about it. But, Wade, good to talk to you. Jake, how you doing, man?
Doing well, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Going back to Karrion, because have you guys brought him up or talked about anything with Cross at all tonight?
Just with the on-site correspondent now, but we did not comment on it other than I asked about the crowd reaction. But I did want to talk to Jake about that, so I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Yeah, so going back to that vignette, I didn't really like it much, honestly. I don't know. I've been with you. I think since he's been on the main roster, I think he's, you know, there's been signs of him getting better as far as with the promo stuff and some of a little bit of that. I still don't love it, but it's been getting better. The vignette tonight, I just felt, from what I saw, was just kind of weak. I don't know. It just felt forced to me. I don't know. I didn't really care for it much. So I want to know what you guys thought about the vignette itself. But I'm really curious with this feud with Shinsuke, because obviously I don't know where they're going to go after when the draft hits, you know, next week. I don't know if they're – I'm assuming they'll both be on the same brand because they're going to be feuding. But I – it's an interesting – it's an intriguing feud because, again, with Cross, I mean, obviously Hunter sees a lot in him, which I, you know, I don't see as much as he probably does. And so I'm just kind of curious where they go with him. But with Shinsuke, you know, you're bringing him back. Yeah, he was never as hot as I think he could have been. I know, Wade, you're definitely with that. I remember hearing, you know, when he first came up, you were super excited. And I was too. And then it was kind of like, oh, well, it was fine, but it could have been a lot better, partly on Shinsuke, partly on WWE, the way they booked him. Well, where do you think they go with the feud? I think it could be a good match, but, you know, who do you think wins? Where do you think they go with it? Because I think it's very intriguing on both ends, because they both have some upside in different ways.
Yeah, so, Jake, first, what do you think of the Karrion video? I asked our Wesley about it in terms of crowd reaction, but what do you think of it in terms of the character of the two, and in terms of Scarlett and Karrion and their dynamic and the words they use, the delivery, the look, the facial expressions, which sometimes I think have worked against them. They've been a little cartoonish, especially Karrion Kross. And then what do you think of that being Shinsuke's first feud coming back? What do you make of that? And also just Shinsuke getting a vignette, you know, where they're kind of almost reintroducing him to the audience and talking about, you know, his key strengths in terms of striking.
Yeah, I guess the start with the Cross vignette, I'm still having the same issue with him that I've had all along in that there doesn't appear to be anything authentic about what he's saying. Like, it would be nice if there was some piece of him that was a part of this gimmick to where it felt like he was speaking to something that he has direct experience with. Because, I mean, essentially they're talking about, you know, like, it's sort of a cult, sort of, you know, everything coming from the tarot cards is sort of removing his own agency in a way by talking about how, you know, nothing he's done has been in his own control. It's all been driven by the cards. And I don't think that's a way to get him to connect with the audience. I don't know if the answer is necessarily to do a complete reinvention of Karrion Kross again, but I don't think this particular angle is the way to go about it. I don't think enough of the audience is buying into this, you know, the tarot act and Scarlett as sort of this, you know, I don't know if you want to call her a witch or, so, you know, however they're phrasing, you know, her part of the act. So sorry, go ahead. Was there something somebody wanted to add there?
Oh, I just think Sean's laughing at you call her a witch or
yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know what she's trying to go for. You know, it spooky, mysterious, magical in some way, you know, connected with the cards or, you know, however you want to, you know, play that up, voodoo or whatever the case may be. But it's not a home run for me by any stretch. And I don't even think their performances are necessarily awful. It doesn't seem like they feel very connected to it. It's like something, you know, that it feels very put on, like a costume, rather than something that is connected to them in any significant way. But I think Shinsuke's vignettes have been good, although I don't really understand how jiu-jitsu would prepare someone to be a precision striker, because that's not really what jiu-jitsu teaches people. It's more of a grappling art, and so that was kind of confusing, but it is worth noting that Shinsuke has now been the king of strong style in WWE for longer than he was in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And so, you know, he's getting to the point now where I think they're going to have to do some kind of soft reboot of Shinsuke to get people to take him seriously, because they never, as you guys mentioned, they never really committed to him when he first jumped up to the main roster. You know, he had the strong entrance, but, you know, they won't subtitle him. They won't do anything to, you know, to try to help him get over the hump of the language barrier. And so I think that has limited his connection to the audience in some ways. But I do think, you know, if they are going to take him seriously, and I think his best run in WWE was under Triple H's creative leadership in NXT, now would be the time, because he's getting to the point where he's sort of aging out of his peak by a long stretch at this point.
Yeah, I'm curious what they have in mind for him, given that they are making a semi-big deal out of his return. And part of that is just who wins the feud with Karrion Kross and Shinsuke. Like, have they decided who they want to look stronger, or do they just try to, you know, go real even Steven on that and just hope, you know, and then they just move on to separate places? Because if they have hopes for Shinsuke to be, say, a credible challenger to Gunther, you know, which I wouldn't rule out. I could see that being a SummerSlam match, for instance. Then he's got to beat Karrion Kross. But if they want to build up Kross to be a heel challenger to a higher-end babyface, then, you know, Shinsuke, as he has been in the past, might be more of a gatekeeper. And I can't tell right now which direction they're going. Do you have a prediction on that? First, Jake, and then Sean?
I would bet my money on Shinsuke. I think there's more upside to having a strong babyface right now than there is to building up another heel. They already have strong heels and heels and that are champions that need fresh challengers. And so I would think that that Kross is just sort of that first hurdle for Shinsuke on the way to something bigger. But I don't know for anything for a fact at this point. It doesn't seem like they have any level of commitment to the Kross character is my read on it at this point.
Sean, what do you think?
I have to be to say I initially was thinking about Kross only because, again, Hunter, I think, is higher on him. I just think he sees more upside in him. And Shinsuke, we've kind of seen the highest he can go. I just don't think Shinsuke can really go that much higher than he's already been. And I was laughing when Brad, and I love Brad, but he brought up a couple of times, you know, bring Boogs back with Nakamura, and I'm like, oh, God, please don't do that. Like, absolutely do not do that. That would be the worst thing for Shinsuke at this point, just to have him be on his own and just kind of do what he's going to do. But I think Shinsuke will win just because I think they do need more baby faces right now. I think they do have top heel champions. And so I think, he could feud with either Gunther. I'm assuming he'd feud against Gunther. So I would assume Shinsuke would win. But it's intriguing. I mean, I hope the match is good. I mean, because Shinsuke can work and Karrion's, very limited in certain aspects. So I hope the match will be decent. But I wanted to go back to the early part of the show, and I just wanted to talk about, you bring the LWO, you make it a thing again, which is fine, which is cool. Bray's doing really good work. I know they're, doing some, I don't know what they're doing with Judgment Day. I don't know where they're ultimately wanting to go with them. But I do think, again, I know it's in tag team stuff and it's with the LWO, but I still think there's so much, I think Santos has so much upside. I just think him losing every single match, I think just, it does hurt him in certain ways. Like, I don't think it's the end of him, like you've said. I don't think it's going to, it's not going to kill him, but I just think there's a lot of upside there, and I just think him losing every match just is not a good thing for him. What do you guys think about that?
Jake?
Yeah, I think he's a bit miscast at the moment, being sort of Ray's buddy in the LWO. They brought him up and introduced him as the heel faction leader, and then, it just didn't seem like they could find – the right place for Santos to succeed. Maybe post-draft that'll change. I almost wonder if, they plan on having, Dominic perhaps steal the LWO out from under of Ray, and maybe Santos and Dominic end up being together at some point. I think there's a lot of that is up in the air because of the draft. But I would agree. I think Santos is definitely underutilized at this point. He's taking a lot of losses on TV, unfortunately. And he was even kind of made to look like a dope on this episode of the show, where he missed a tag that the referee signaled and then ended up trying to pin the wrong guy and lost the match because of it. Like, it was just not a great showing for him tonight.
The sudden and sort of unexplained turn without context of Santos Escobar and his group to join Ray and the LWO, it felt like, okay, we need to get to this spot because we want to tell a more important story long term. And that just hasn't revealed itself yet. But it does seem like in the end that it could be. And if it's a little bit longer story arc, getting Dominic out of the Judgment Day, maybe via draft, but then eventually Legado del Fantasma and Dominic linking up and being part of a group together, that's a good way to give Dominic people to play off of, so he's not alone, but a group that makes more sense to play off of, because obviously he's grown bigger than they anticipated within the Priest and Balor structure, you know, in what the dynamic was supposed to be there, to the point that he's kind of overshadowing them, and I don't know that they want. I think they can have Dominic getting booed, but also have Priest and Balor look like alphas who aren't getting overshadowed every time they share ring time and mic time with him. So I wouldn't be surprised if the destination isn't for Legado to be heels. The only downside is in WWE, it's, you know, it is not the land of giants like it used to be, but as heels, they are smaller. So you know, they might be taking that into consideration going, you know, we want our, you know, bigger baby faces to be beating up smaller heels, but they're so, you know, I think they can be a really effective heel group, especially with Dominic in it. So yeah, I think there's a decent chance that what you said, Jake, is it comes to fruition. Sean, what else for us?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up too. I mean, I'm definitely excited to see what they do with the draft next week, because I know we've talked about we want them to do something different, make it feel more important, but don't do what they did initially when they got on Fox and have the war room, but just make it so cheesy. I mean, I remember we were all calling into that, being like, that's the dumbest thing they've ever thought of. Like, really, you're going to have a war room and you're going to make it look that dumb and make them act like total idiots. I mean, it was just, I hope they don't do that, but I hope they make it feel important, make it feel like a big deal. I'm curious. And so I'm excited to see what they do. You know, they could be very disappointing, but it could be very good too. So Wager, the flagship with Greg was really good. I really enjoyed that. And Jake, I just want to say, I never really got to say on the air with you, but I appreciate you and what you do with Jason on .net. And I hope I've made Jason proud on the few podcasts I've been on with him. Cause you know, those were fun ones to do. So I really enjoyed it, but I appreciate both of you guys. And I won't comment anymore cause I haven't seen anymore. So I appreciate all you guys do. Thanks for taking my call. Always.
Thanks, Sean. Good to hear from you. Appreciate you checking in. Enjoy the rest of the show. All right, Jake, we can wrap up here just with it. I'll throw to you kind of more open-ended. Anything else in your notes that you want to bring up from the show tonight?
I'm just looking over my notes here, and I think just the one note that I had on the women's tag team match, and we kind of touched on that match briefly earlier, but I came away from it thinking, well, they're probably going to be going back to this because, you know, the finish was sort of out of character for babyfaces to use a leverage pin and of course the water gimmick being turnabout from Monday. But I think they, if they're going to go back to this match, they should spend a decent amount of time, you know, in between title defenses, trying to put some tension between these two teams, because the biggest issue in the women's division right now, and it's not just with the tag titles, it's really with all of them, is that they haven't really found a groove and a successful program in that women's division in a while. They've all kind of come across as pretty cold. And maybe Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus will be the beginning of turning that around. But they definitely need more heat in that women's division. And I think the creative output in general with the women has been poor since Triple H took over. They just have not found a way to get anybody new over in any significant way. And I think there's polite, you know, applause, and I think people do like Liv Morgan and Raquel as a team, but they got to find a way to get some heat in that division. And maybe you know, Sonya and Chelsea aren't necessarily the right people, but they have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to get some of these women stronger reactions, because it really does feel like it's a step down from even the mid and lower card men's programs, and that wasn't always the case, you know, just a couple of years ago.
What do you think about Liv? We talk about how, you know, her gimmick has changed, the way they stress certain character traits of hers changes, and she's wild and hardcore for the purpose of one feud, and then it's all over the place. And tonight they were kind of leaning into her being kind of like Butch has been portrayed, as like this sort of unhinged, got to be held back by someone else, eager to go fight wrestler. And I still don't know what is the best fit for her, but what have you thought of what they're doing with her? And is she someone who could be promoted better, or is the best thing to do to actually feature her less and focus on some others who haven't had as many chances and character resets as she's had?
Well, I think a lot of, you know, they definitely went too quickly with her. You know, she captured that women's championship, and it was pretty clear that, you know, they didn't really have a plan for her after that. It was just supposed to be, hey, we're going to give you a really cool moment. And there wasn't, you know, hey, we're going to be, you know, we have a plan for the next month or 2 months or 3 months or anything along those lines. And she's sort of been flailing ever since she dropped that title back to Ronda Rousey. And so I think she's at her best, or at least she's been at her best, when she's an underdog babyface. And they haven't really had her in a position to portray that character in quite some time. They've had her doing the kind of manic pixie thing where either, you know, as a heel, she's just super hardcore. And as a, you know, as a babyface, she's just got like 3,000% the energy of everybody else. And I mean, she gets reactions. Like, I think people want to like Liv Morgan, but there's just no depth to what she's doing. And so that's really my issue with it. Pick, you know, if you want to have her be this sort of manic character, then try to add more layers to it. You know, there has to be something else besides this unbelievable, unhinged amount of energy to this person. And I think that's really where I find a lot of the women's division is struggling. It's just a lot of very two-dimensional people, and yeah. Unfortunately, it's hard to connect with that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, cool. Jake, unless you got something else, we can wrap up there.
No, I think we covered everything, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. Glad you're on. Always good having you on, and we'll have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks to our listeners, and thanks to our on-site correspondents, our callers and emailers, and we will talk to you all next time.